often the frame that is placed around the fact of a piece of news or remembrance of a past war or a piece of history that happened, the frame sometimes has more power than the actual content within the frame. So the question is, who put the frame there? What was the purpose of the frame? And do people who are seeing the bit of news or the Remembrance Day ceremony or whatever we're talking about, do people understand the frame that's being put around the facts that are being then transmitted to them? And, you know, you could take any war, take the Vietnam War, take World War One, take any war, and you see the frames that nations put around that past conflict. The moment you start entering this stream of subject, the depth of history you've got to start exploring to understand the framing starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger, like an iceberg. The history of First World War has gone through three stages. It was fought. It killed 60 million people. They ended back in the same town that they started. And then they continued with Act Two of that war, 18, 19 years later with World War II. But it was first presented as a very heroic event by those who won. Very heroic event. Word sacrifice, fallen, were created, and the death of millions of soldiers and civilians was put in a frame of fighting for democracy and freedom. And about 30 years after that, in the 60s, and 40 years later, in the 50s and the 60s, then that frame really started to be questioned about World War One. We're not talking about World War Two. And there became a lot of harsh criticism of both the war and how it was framed by the community, by the historians, by the governments in the aftermath, by those countries who won. Let's be careful that we're not talking about those countries who weren't on the living side. And so in the 60s or 70s, the World War One went through a very critical phase, like the generals were stupid, they didn't know what they'd do, the death of millions was for nothing, it was incompetence all around, and it only led to Act Two, which is World War Two. And now we've gone to sort of a more nuanced, balanced of those two versions of what was that war about, so to speak. You know, was it a valiant attempt? You know, generals were learning valiantly how to deal with new battle techniques, or they didn't know what they were doing. It was a failed idea that killed millions of people. The Remembrance Day ceremonies were created in the first stage of that history of World War One. And they were partly created because for the first time, World War One was a very democratizing event in that soldier poets started to speak. The officer class, which used to be the aristocrats, you know, traditionally the officers were the aristocrats and the peasants, us, were the soldiers. And that began to break down in World War One, and it became more of a democratic idea, which is why they started to remember ordinary soldiers in World War One and not just the officers, so to speak. But November the 11th sits within that period of remembering World War One. So people like me come along and say, okay, so it's all well and good, November the 11th, and I really honor the meaning it has for many people, but it doesn't have meaning for a whole bunch of other people. And why doesn't have these meanings for different communities in Canada, but also for, my father was a World War II combat veteran and never went to November the 11th ceremonies. He just didn't suit him, so to speak. So the question is, how can we talk about Remembrance Day, which is in fact the way Canada remembers a past conflict, and what are the frames of that? How can we talk about that, and how can we make it more inclusive, so to speak? A fairly a loose place that I landed on, but it's a long lineage of ideas to get to where we are in talking about the appropriateness of November the 11th, who it's meant to serve, who it doesn't serve, and how can we actually expand it to make it a more resonant idea for Canadians.
So what, excuse me, why doesn't Remember Today and have meaning for a lot of people? I know you've talked about large portions of the population going silent around Remembrance Day.
Does it have a meaning for the Chinese community? Does it have meaning for the South Asian community? Does it have meaning for the Vietnamese community? Mostly these answers are no. Does it have a meaning for Italian Canadians? Does it have meaning for German Canadians? Czech Canadians? Hungarian Canadians? And therein lies the beginning of all those who are excluded, as it were, because we've kept the ceremony based on that early model that was created in the 1920s, when it was one version, when it was a very, well, you have to look at the roots of nationalism and romanticism and how it became a kind of braiding together in World War One, and how romanticism, the romanticism of the 19th century was blown apart by that war. And what emerged in the 1920s, romanticism was just driven off the map. People looked at what happened, the millions that were killed. I mean, a battle, the Battle of the Somme, 60,000 casualties in the first day, and they didn't actually go anywhere. People looked at that, and the cynicism of looking at that futility of what they were doing actually blew apart the romanticism in the writers and the painters and all the rest of it, and in the music. And what emerged in the 1920s was not romantic at all.
So do you see our current discourse around remembrance as being sort of rooted in like a white English-Canadian perspective?
It's rooted in We Won. It's rooted in it's rooted in a lot, and I have total respect for it, and it has meaning for many, many people, and it has some meaning for me, and I have total respect for what it means to some people. But as a symbol to how we commemorate war, I'll give you an example. We have 2 minutes of silence. I think that's an excellent idea. And for its time, when it was created in 1919, 1920, you know, I think the Cenotaph in Toronto was put up in 1924, 25. At the time, this was pretty radical, progressive ideas of how you remember a conflict and soldiers who never returned. This was fairly progressive at the time. But for me, 2 minutes now is not enough to think. And I say, well, why isn't it 20 minutes? Why isn't it 2 hours? Imagine what November the 11th would be like if at 11 o'clock the city stopped for 2 hours. What would happen in those 2 hours?
I mean,
2 minutes is easy to get people on to turn up, and do the, you know, to do the ceremony, and it's over by 11:30 and you all go home. But we did kill over 100 million people in the last century in wars that we were part of. And where do you put the memories of 100 million people? Do you just let them drift off after 2 minutes of silence? Do you really think about a conflict that cost that much? And then do you think about all conflicts?
So,
but I will say one thing. We're talking about those who came after the conflict and the ceremonies and language they set up to remember the conflict. We're not talking about actually the men, and it's mostly men, and women who were in the conflict and were killed and wounded either physically or psychologically by it. The actual people who were in the conflict, I have total respect for. I do not question them at all because, you know, members of the military have what's called an unlimited liability clause, and none of us have the unlimited liability clause where we work, but they do. So the discussion is not about them. It's not about, you know, whether you respect them or not. The discussion is about those who came after and created these ceremonies and rituals and memories and frames. That's where the discussion lies.
So how is your project, The World Remembers, trying to change that frame and make remembrance more meaningful for everybody?
Well, we say, as I say, the discussion is never about the actual men and women who went and fought and came back wounded, either psychologically or physically. That is not what the discussion is about. The discussion is about the aftermath and the rituals and language created afterwards. Having said that, who remembers the actual people who were there? We say we do. We turn up and we remember them. THEM. And THEM isn't enough for me. I don't think that is them. That is putting them in a category and saying, okay, I've remembered them. And that doesn't go far enough for me. not in that 68,000 Canadians were killed in World War One. Now we can talk about World War Two. We can talk about Korea, and we can talk about Afghanistan. But 68,000 were killed. Well, it's not appropriate for me, especially on the centenary of a war, where we're never really going to remember World War One like this again, to say THEM. I want to say Robert, Emile, and Louis, and Jacques, and Saeed. I want to say the names. Because then I'm not talking about the ceremonies that people created afterwards. I want to talk about those who are actually there and those who are actually never returned. And so the world remembers says, let's remember the individuals. We believe the institutions and the memories, the institutional ends and the institutional memories and the rituals and the, we will leave that to others to do. But we think the least we can do is to actually name them. And then say to the families who lost great-great-uncles and great-grandfathers and great-great-great-uncles, you will know the time that your relative's name will appear, will be seen for once up on City Hall or in GC, on the Government Conference Center in Ottawa, or well, we're in eight other countries as well. You will know when your great-great-uncle name will appear, or your great-great-aunt, she may have been a nurse. There were 65 nurses killed in World War One. But we think it's the people who it's about. And in a nutshell, I say it's the people who fought for the war, the people who paid for the war, it's the people who were killed in the war, and therefore it's the people that we remember. So I move down to the basic layer of saying it's about people. And people is not THEM. That's a piece of language. People is their names.
And why was it important for you to have the names of all people, and, you know, regardless of nationality, and not sort of broken down by nationality?
I guess my response to that is, as I say, the November the 11th ceremonies, respectful and honorable as they were created in the 1920s. So do we want to continue to commemorate war in a way that was created in the 1920s, which reflected the kind of Canada that Canada thought it was going to be in the 1920s? And if you think back to Canada in the 1920s, think about First Nations people. What was going on then? I think your listeners will have an idea of what was going on. Think about the relations between French Canadians and English Canadians. You know, were Italian Canadians respected? No. Were Ukrainian Canadians respected? No. Were Czech Canadians, Polish Canadians, Polacks? You know, it was a very Anglified place. We were trying to be more British than the British. Toronto was known as the Belfast of the Belfast of North America, so to speak. So do we want to remember in that mold, or do we want to create a new one? And so I say, what about the South Asian Canadian? What about the Sikh Canadian? What about the Italian Canadian, Slovenian Canadian, Vietnamese Canadian? Shouldn't they be involved by seeing their families' names appear at the same time? What about the Chinese Canadians? And there were Chinese Canadians killed in the war. So the world remembers say, we want to step outside that first idea of remembrance. We want to broaden it, which means showing the German names, Turkish names, Italian names, Slovenian names. I am spurred on the journey by people who come up to me. A person came up to me and, you know, she was in 50s, and she said, thank you, Mr. Thompson. That's the first time I've ever felt included on November the 11th. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I came up from Germany when I was 3 years old. I'm Canadian. You know, I grew up, spent my whole life here. But every November the 11th, I sort of go silent because it's not for me, because November the 11th here so far is still about those of us who won and not about everybody. It's not about the people. And she said, that's the first time I felt included, as it were. When the Sikh Canadian, right, sees a Sikh name up there, we've said, you're part of this. Your family is part of this. You know, your community is part of this. I think we have to listen to all the stories. Do the main category of stories told about the war, do they occupy sort of center stage, and all the subsidiary and secondary stories don't get a chance to get on stage and be heard? You know, do the main stories take up all the air in the room? And then all those other millions of stories, they never get in the room because all the air is taken up by the main stories.